Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the Spotlight on Mexico webinar. We're going to discuss opportunities with the U.S. Fulbright program in Mexico. And I want to thank everyone for joining us. So again, I just want to do just a double check, a quick sound check. If you can hear my voice and see the screen, if you can just chat in to let me know that you can hear us and see us. We'll just begin in just a second, but if you can just chat that in and let us know if you can hear us and see us, that's great. So it looks like, yes, perfect. Looks like folks can hear us and see us, so thanks so much. So my name is Peter Rauchy. I'm an outreach and recruitment specialist at the Institute of International Education here in New York. Today I'm joined by Dr. Annalise Richard. Annalise Richard is a visiting professor at the Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana in Mexico City. An anthropologist, Dr. Richard spent her Fulbright year researching the role of scientists in public debates around biodiversity and biotechnology at the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México. Previously, she was an associate professor of anthropology and chair of international studies at the University of the Pacific in Stockton, California. Really glad to have Dr. Richard join us today and share her insights about what the kinds of things and what she did on her Fulbright grant. So let's talk about the Fulbright program in general before we dive into focusing on Mexico. So the Fulbright program was established in 1946 to really expand and strengthen the connection between the people of the United States and citizens of the rest of the world. Really, the inspiration that Senator Fulbright had was to inspire a greater mutual understanding between people of the United States and the rest of the world, and that's so important to the Fulbright program. This resonates with what makes a strong application for the Fulbright program. It really helps we do want to support great research and teaching projects, absolutely, there's no question about that, but Fulbright projects are contextualized in this person-to-person diplomacy, this ambassadorial aspect, that this is a wonderful thing for the United States and a wonderful thing for Mexico to participate in a scholar program to Mexico. So really keeping that in mind can really help you enhance the way that you articulate your proposal and the way that you approach the application. The Fulbright program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs and is administered by the Institute of International Education in the U.S. As a Fulbrighter, you are in great company. There have been 380,000 awards granted since the inception of the program, and we send about 800 U.S. scholars abroad annually. Throughout the umbrella of Fulbright programs, we have 160 participant countries, and our alumni include heads of state, Nobel laureates, Pulitzer Prize recipients, MacArthur Fellows, Presidential Medal of Freedom recipients, and many, many other, our alumni have many, many other accolades to them. But again, you are in great company as a Fulbrighter. Today, we're going to focus on the core Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. This program includes awards that support teaching and research, and they're generally from anywhere from 3 to 12 months. We have programs specifically for the faculty, for the core awards, available in about 125 different countries. So we had, in the previous slide, you saw that there were 160 countries. Those are for the full umbrella of Fulbright programs. For the scholar programs, for the core U.S. scholar program, we have about 125 different countries participating. Generally, these awards are for faculty, administrators, and professionals, and they're open to all disciplines. You have to really look at what's available in our catalog of awards, and I'll actually show you how to find information on the catalog, and identify a specific award, and then apply with a specific proposed project. You can be hosted in a variety of institutions, including universities, NGOs, think tanks, cultural institutions, and others, depending on the specific parameters of the awards. Today, we're going to be focusing on opportunities in Mexico. Our deadline, though, our general deadline for applications for the scholar program is August 1st. For the U.S. Scholar programs, I want to talk about some baseline general eligibility criteria. So you do have to be a U.S. citizen to participate in the U.S. Scholar Program. If you're not a U.S. citizen, we have the Visiting Scholar Program, which brings international scholars to the United States. But to participate in the U.S. Scholar Program for U.S. citizens going abroad on a Fulbright grant, you do have to be a U.S. citizen. Then depending on the award, there may be some degree requirements. Many of our awards do require a PhD or other terminal degree, the terminal degree in the field, although others are open to applicants with master's degrees who are practitioners outside of academia who have a particular professional or academic experience as well. So you want to pay attention to the award parameters, and I'm going to actually open up the catalog of awards and show you where you can find some of this information. If you're applying for a teaching award, there is likely to be some expressed amount of teaching experience written into the award description. So you want to pay attention to that if the award that you're applying to features teaching. And then there are new policies on previous Fulbright Scholar grants. So there used to be a cap on the number of Fulbright awards you could receive. That is no longer the case. You can receive as many awards as you are competitive to receive. You do, though, have to wait 2 years between the end of one grant before you can start an application for another grant. So let's look at what's available in Mexico. Let's dive deep into what Mexico has on offer. There are 6 awards available in Mexico, and then there's a regional award between Canada and Mexico. The first award is the Postdoctoral Scholar Award, and this award fits the profile of someone who recently obtained a doctoral degree. This award, there are up to 4 grants for this award, and the grant length can be anywhere from 3 to 9 months. This award supports just research or a combination of teaching and research. This award is open to all disciplines, but there are a number of preferred disciplines that are listed in the award description. And again, I'll pull up that catalog of awards for you. Let's look at the U.S. Studies Chair. So this award is an interesting award because it's a placed award. There are a series of pre-identified potential hosts that include ETAM, the University of Veracruz, University of Guadalajara, the Universidad de las Americas Puebla. So there are 4 potential host institutions, and you write a proposal, but you're actually placed in one of these institutions. So you can identify, you know, what your specializations are in your proposal, and COMEXAS, the Fulbright Commission in Mexico, will actually place you in one of the potential host institutions. We have a very, very special award in Mexico, the Fulbright Scholar Border Program. This award has a very particular requirements to it. You must be affiliated with a U.S. institution along one of the Mexico border states, and you're going to affiliate with an institution in Mexico that's along the U.S. border. You travel sort of back and forth between the U.S. and Mexico, and again, it's truly focused on folks that are from U.S. institutions that are in states that border Mexico. In the next award is a Science and Technology Award, which is super broad-based but focused on disciplines that fall into science and technology. And this award supports teaching, research, or a combination of teaching and research. Another award that I want to talk about that has a very specific area of focus, and sort of jumping around just a little bit, is the Teaching English as a Foreign Language Award. So this award is obviously meant for folks with backgrounds in linguistics, teaching English as a second language, TEFL, TESOL, and really, really focused on that. This award features teaching quite heavily, or a combination of teaching and research, and this is also another placed award. So the Fulbright Commission in Mexico will actually place you in an institution when you're on this award. I want to talk about the Social Sciences and Humanities Award. This is similar to the Science and Technology Award. This is sort of open-ended to fields that fall into the Social Sciences and Humanities, and generally is sort of almost like a mirror of the Science and Technology Award. It can be anywhere from 3 to 9 months. It supports projects that feature just teaching, just research, or a combination of teaching and research. The last award I want to talk about on this slide, the last offering to Mexico, is the Carlos Rico Award for North American Studies. This is a very, very special award. It's the only regional award in the Western Hemisphere where you go to more than one country as part of the foundational activities of the award. This award features a 50-50 grant where you spend half the time in Canada and half the time in Mexico working on a project that involves something that connects to, you know, North America at large. So it's a very, very special award that to the Western Hemisphere. So what I'm going to do now, though, I'm going to pull up the catalog of awards so that you can start to see what how to find information and how you can actually see these award parameters. And this is going to be really helpful when you're searching for information. So for this webinar, we're going to focus on Mexico. So let's pull up Mexico and let's search all the awards available. So let's look deeper into the Social Sciences and Humanities Award. So we see this award. So when we open up the award, we click that award and it opens up. We see four tabs. We see award details, award requirements, award benefits, and a country area overview. We see there are up to six grants available on this award, meaning that up to six people will be funded on this award. We see that this award supports activities that include just teaching, just research, or a combination of teaching and research. We see the grant length as being anywhere from 3 to 9 months. We see this statement that applications are sought in all appropriate disciplines. Obviously, this is a social sciences and humanities award, so this any discipline that falls under those rubrics, but the preferred disciplines are listed below. So economics, law, political sciences, public administration, public and global health, and urban planning. Under award requirements, we see that for this award, a letter of invitation is strongly preferred, meaning that you can apply for this without a letter of invitation from a host institution in Mexico, but it's strongly preferred that you get a letter of invitation. We have information about language requirements, so intermediate Spanish is required. The level of Spanish language must be commensurate with the requirements of your project. So if you're proposing something that requires advanced Spanish and you don't have advanced Spanish, you have to sort of address how you're going to accomplish what you're hoping to do. We look for the profile. We're looking at academics and appropriately qualified folks outside of academia, and what is required is a PhD or other terminal degree such as an MFA, a JD, or an MD. If you don't have a PhD or other professional degree, you will not be considered for this award. Here we have more information, just general information. You must provide a letter of invitation from a Mexican university accredited institution or research center before the grant start date. So up here where it says a letter of invitation is strongly preferred, you can apply without a letter of invitation, but you need to have a letter of invitation before the grant start date. That means that you can submit your application by August 1st without a letter of invitation, but you eventually do have to get a letter of invitation before you start your grant date. And COMEXIS, the Fulbright Commission in Mexico, will actually help you with an affiliation if necessary. And here we have some contact information and links to resources that COMEXIS has on offer, including a link to universities in Mexico. Under the award benefits, we see potential benefits. We don't confirm actual grant amounts until we actually confer the grant itself, but this gives you a good idea of what could be on offer for the grant. And then here we have a country overview, which gives a good sense of how the country fits into the Fulbright program at large. So pulling back out into the general search that we did just a few weeks ago, we see other awards listed. So let's pull up that U.S. Studies Chair Award that I talked about earlier. This award, as I mentioned, is a placed award, meaning that COMEXIS will actually place you in an appropriate institution. And here they've identified some potential hope institutions, which I mentioned earlier. So ITAM, University of Veracruz, and other potential host institutions in Mexico. So unlike the other award where you're procuring a letter of invitation, this award you should not seek a letter of invitation, and COMEXIS will actually place you. Note the difference here, too, of the language requirement. Teaching will be conducted in English. Intermediate proficiency in Spanish is recommended but not required. So that's a really helpful insight. And you can see even in the same country, even in Mexico, there are going to be different language requirements depending on the specific awards. So let's go back into the PowerPoint. If you'll excuse me for just 1 second as I pull up the PowerPoint, we'll continue on with our presentation. And what I am delighted to say is that we have Dr. Annalise Richard on the line, who's going to share with us insight from her grant in Mexico. So, Dr. Richard, I invite you to give us some insight on the kinds of things you did on your grant in Mexico. And Dr. Richard, I think we have you on the line. I invite you to
Hi.
Speak about
you
your
me?
Loud and clear. Yes.
Okay. Great. Sorry, I had a few problems getting the microphone back on. So I did my Fulbright at the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México in the Center for Research on North America, and there were several components to what I did with my grant. The most important was fieldwork. I'm a social cultural anthropologist, and once one arrives sort of at mid-academic career, there's very little time to do the kind of data collection that anthropologists tend to do, which is long-term intensive fieldwork. And so the grant for me was an opportunity to do lots of interviews and participant observation with the group of people I was studying, who are scientists who become involved in political debates around biotechnology and biodiversity in Mexico. So one of the pictures there, the one on the top, is of me in the botanical gardens at the UNAM. None of my pictures have pictures of my field work as such, because part of my research was to guarantee anonymity to my research subjects because of the political nature of what we were talking about. So I don't have pictures of me actively doing field work, but there's a picture of me in the botanical gardens, which was near several of the institutes where I was interviewing scientists. So the bulk of my time was spent doing field work. I also participated regularly in seminars and research groups around the subject of my research. At the UNAM, there are a great number of active research groups, but also seminars and reading groups that meet regularly. So one of the wonderful things was discovering who these groups were little by little as I was getting integrated into my research institute, and then being able to participate in those groups that really enriched my research and helped me to see how other colleagues in Mexico were thinking about the issues that that I was researching. I presented at conferences, the COMEXA, the Mexican Social Sciences Conference, was during the time I was in the field, and so I was able to present with a panel of colleagues. And I also, through my research group in my institute, was able to help plan some academic events. And finally, I worked with graduate students. I did not have any regular teaching responsibilities. I was on a purely research grant, but I made myself available to work with graduate students who happened to be interested in the topics that I was researching, and ended up working with a couple of them. So it was actually a broader range of activities than I had originally contemplated. I originally thought about mostly doing field work, but there were all these other opportunities presented themselves, and so I was able to take advantage of them.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your insight, Dr. Richard. I hope that's inspiring to the folks that are on the webinar. You know, I can talk a lot about sort of general information about the Fulbright program and give folks insight, but really hearing from an alum of the program is really helpful. So I really want to thank you for sharing that insight.
You're welcome.
So folks, we're going to continue on with the presentation here. I want to point out some special considerations for awards in Mexico. So as we saw in the catalog, there are some different language requirements depending on the award. In general, Mexico, they recommend or require, in many cases, intermediate Spanish. That will depend on the award, though, so you want to pay attention to the language requirements in the parameters of the awards. For example, though, the Teaching English as Foreign Language Award does require advanced Spanish fluency, whereas the U.S. Studies Chair Award, all the teaching is done in English. Intermediate Spanish is recommended but not required. Then for the Carlos Rico Award, that award that where you go to Canada and Mexico, generally English is fine in Canada unless you're at a francophone institution, in which case your French has to be commensurate with the activities that you propose. And then in general, in Mexico for that award, intermediate Spanish will be required. There are some travel warning advisories in Mexico. Some states in Mexico may be restricted due to the State Department travel warning, and we have a link to the travel warning information. You want to refer to that and be aware that some institutions in Mexico, if they are in areas that have a travel warning, may not be eligible for the Fulbright program. You can absolutely reach out to us if you have questions about that. So don't feel free to contact us if you're unsure. There is, in the Western Hemisphere, a special award feature, the Regional Travel Award. So during your grant period, you're able to apply for short-term regional travel to go to eligible West Hem countries. This allows you to travel to and from your destination and really is designed for things like going to seminars and conferences and sort of short-term opportunities in a particular country that's also in the Western Hemisphere. I presented a webinar for opportunities in Canada, and there was an alumnus who joined us, Dr. Chip Taylor, who used the Regional Travel Award to go to Uruguay during his grant period in Canada for a short-term opportunity to attend a seminar and teach a workshop in Uruguay. So that's a great feature of the Western Hemisphere Awards that you are able to have to apply for additional funding for short-term travel. So let's talk about considerations around the Fulbright program in general. Stepping back from Mexico and looking at the Fulbright program in general, I want to talk about ways in which Fulbright may be able to work for you in ways that you might not have thought about. And what I want folks to get out of this discussion is this idea of, you know what, maybe I don't want to self-select out. Maybe I want to consider, potential options, and consider things that I might not have thought about before that could actually make or break the possibility of doing a Fulbright this year. So unfortunately for Mexico, we don't offer the flex option, but throughout 25 countries in the Western Hemisphere, we do offer a flex option, meaning that you can segment your grant into multiple visits over 2 years. We don't offer that in Mexico currently. In general, though, grants in Mexico can be anywhere from 3 months to 9 months, generally, depending on the award. So we don't offer that flex option, but if you're not able to be away for a full semester, or if you're not up for a sabbatical, you may want to consider looking at flex options, or in the case of Mexico, proposing a sort of shorter term project. Again, many of the grants in Mexico can be anywhere from 3 to 9 months. Depending on the award and depending on your profile, you want to make sure that you match the profile express. So there are awards for everyone throughout the catalog, depending on at every level of your academic career in general, everywhere from postdoc all the way up to distinguished chair and everything in between. So you just want to make sure in the applicant profile information that your profile resonates with what is described. As I mentioned, we have the Carlos Rico Award for Canada and Mexico. That's the only multi-country award in the Western Hemisphere, but that's a great way to focus on issues important to North America and engage Canada and Mexico in your project. We do also have the Global Scholar Award. So this is an award where you can go to anywhere between two or three countries, but they must be in two different world regions. So you couldn't go to three West Hem countries, but you could go to one or two West Hem countries and maybe a country in Europe or a country in Sub-Saharan Africa, for example. That's what the Global Scholar Award is designed for. Unless otherwise specified in the award description, home university affiliation is not required, and applications from professionals, independent scholars, emeritus scholars are welcome, again, unless otherwise stated in the award description. So on this slide, I don't want to spend too much time on this slide because I want to open the floor up to questions, but I want to encourage you that you're not alone in this process. We have lots and lots of resources on our website. So we break down every aspect of the application. We even provide project statement guidance, sample project statements. We provide information around letters of invitation and how to approach letters of invitation, getting a letter of invitation. We have a very robust series of webinars, including this one, that can be focused on countries or disciplines or regions or other special considerations. So definitely check out our webinar archive. We have lots of live webinars, but we archive our webinars so that if you can't make them live, you're able to join us at your own leisure and watch a pre-recorded webinar. We also have our Fulbright Scholar blog, which offers lots and lots of stories and is sort of the personal side to Fulbright. We've heard from Dr. Richard today, and that's so wonderful. And then going into our blog, you can see stories from other alumni. You can get other insights into the kinds of things that people have done on their Fulbright grants and the kinds of experiences that they've had. Lastly, I want to point out my Fulbright, that is our network where you can sign up to receive targeted messages if you have specific interests about particular countries or particular disciplines. You can sign up and indicate your interests and receive messages focused on what your specific interests are. Let's talk about the application. So the application really isn't something you haven't seen before. It's pretty straightforward, but I want to address the application. In general, the application form is pretty standard. Some biological information, some background information. Really, though, the crux of your application is the project statement. So this is generally a five-page proposal where you're writing your project. What you hope to do on a Fulbright grant. And I'll unpack the project statement a little bit in an upcoming slide. The CV or resume is part of your application, as is a standard component of most applications. We want 6 pages. We'll go up to 8 pages for a Distinguished Chair Award. We want 3 letters of reference, and the letters of reference should be from the 3 best advocates you have, people that know what you're hoping to do, know what you have done, and understand how it fits into the Fulbright program and can really articulate this in a letter of reference. If you have a home affiliation in the United States, it's quite common that folks in that situation will have someone from your home affiliation write a letter of reference. If you are applying for an award that features teaching, you definitely want to have at least 1 letter of reference address your capacity as an instructor. But other than that, we're super general. The letters of reference should come from your 3 best advocates. Depending on the award, there will be other sort of baseline application components. So if you're applying for an award that features teaching, we'll want syllabi. 2 to 3 syllabi, up to 10 pages, that really give us a sense of who you are as an instructor, give us a sense of your pedagogy. These can be syllabi from classes you have taught, classes you hope to teach, some combination therein. But really, this is designed to give us a sense of the kind of instructor that you are. We For awards that feature research, we'd like a bibliography. This is a 3-page document that you could really look at as, almost as a literature review. It's not works cited, per se, in your application, but it's really the relevant research for the project that you're proposing. So we want to get a sense of what you feel is the relevant work for the project that you're proposing. The language proficiency report is an application component. Throughout the Western Hemisphere, there will be varying language requirements. For Mexico, in general, we're looking for intermediate Spanish. The TEFL Award, Teaching English as a Foreign Language, does require advanced Spanish fluency, and the U.S. Studies Chair is actually, they recommend intermediate Spanish, but all your teaching will be done in English. So you want to pay attention to the language requirements in the award description. But for the language proficiency report, this is a 2-phase report. There's a self-evaluation where you evaluate yourself for that language, and then there's an external evaluation where you have someone external evaluate your language abilities. So the evaluator can be the head of a language department, someone that's qualified to teach that language to people who do not speak that language natively. So it's really, we're open-ended about it. It just should be someone who's qualified to evaluate you in that language, Spanish in the case of Mexico. Letters of invitation can be an application component. Some awards require letters of invitation. Some prefer them. In some cases, you can apply for the award without a letter of invitation, but as we saw in some awards in Mexico, even though you can apply without the letter of invitation, you do have to eventually have that letter of invitation before you can actually start your grant. And then, as I mentioned, in Mexico, as we saw, some of the awards, the COMEXIS, the Fulbright Commission in Mexico, will actually place you in a potential host institution. If you're applying for an award in fields such as the arts, architecture, writing, and journalism, you will expect work samples, which you can upload into the application. So let's talk about the project statement. The project statement, this is really the crux of your application, and it's your way to engage with us and show us that you're putting forth a project that fits into the goal of Fulbright, but that is also a quality project in your field, and you have a sense of what you're hoping to do. So we're looking for quality, we're looking for feasibility, and we're looking for impact and outcomes. Do you have a plan for carrying out the work that you hope to do? Why is Fulbright the right opportunity for you? Why is Mexico the right place for you to be? What is your connection to Mexico? Is the work, if you're proposing something that could be done in Mexico or Denmark or somewhere else, that's not as strong an application as if you're proposing something that has to be done in a particular institution in Mexico, or in Mexico in general, a particular region in Mexico. So you want to pay attention to that. What is the connection? What is the engagement? You want to talk about what you plan to do and give us a sense of what your plan actually is. What specific courses are you going to teach? What methodology will you use for your research? Then you want to talk about the impact, the outcomes from your grant. How is your activity beneficial to the United States? How is it beneficial to Mexico, to your home institution, to your host institution? What are the outcomes that you can envision from the work that you're doing? I want to take a moment to talk a little bit about letters of invitation. So letters of invitation, they're generally non-binding expressions of interest from a proposed host institution. They ideally should come from the person that will be hosting you, the person that you're collaborating with, and should be on institution letterhead. As we saw in Mexico, though, there's a variety of requirements. Some awards ask you not to seek a letter of invitation because the COMEXIS will place you in a host institution. Others, require a letter of invitation. Others prefer a letter of invitation, but you don't have to have a letter of invitation in some cases when you submit your application, but you do have to have a letter of invitation to start your grant activity. So, keeping all that in mind and paying attention to the award parameters, you'll get to understand, some of the requirements around letters of invitation. in many cases, Comexis is able to help you if you don't have affiliations or if you've started a conversation and sort of need additional help. Comexis may be able to help you in many cases. So a competitive application is really something that you want to focus on. How can you optimize your application? How can it be competitive? So we want to absolutely support groundbreaking research and teaching projects, but you have to understand the Fulbright goal of promoting mutual understanding. As a Fulbrighter, you are an ambassador, and you have to understand that and contextualize the work that you're proposing in that notion. So why is this good for the U.S.? Why is it good for Mexico? Understanding that person-to-person diplomacy and articulating that is going to make a strong application. Understanding the parameters of the award is also key. So understanding the kinds of things that the award supports, the kind of profile that the award is looking for, finding the congruence between what you are proposing and what the award is looking for, that's key to having a competitive application. And then we want to know what your plan is or what your vision is for the outcomes. How will this impact your professional development? How will this impact you academically, personally, professionally? Is there the opportunity for future collaborations, a connection to the institution? Are you able to sort of, on other trips to the institution, maybe bring your students or host students from that institution at your home institution in the U.S.? The outcomes and impact are as varied as our scholars themselves, but we want to have a sense of, what your vision is for this and how you envision the impact and outcomes of your work to be. Let's talk a little bit about our review process. This is super general, but I think it's helpful to understand. So you submit your application in August. Our deadline is August 1st, and then you go into your technical screening process where we will screen applications to make sure that they're technically eligible to be considered. After the tech screen, you go into what we refer to as peer review, where you are reviewed by different committees. You're reviewed by a discipline-specific committee that's looking at your application based on the discipline of the project. And then you're reviewed by a committee that's focused on the country or the region. So if you're a chemical engineer that's submitting an application to Mexico, or if your project is in chemical engineering in Mexico, you'll be reviewed by an engineering committee, and you'll be reviewed by a committee focused on applications to Mexico. We let you know one way or the other if you've made it through peer review, and then you go on to the countries. The countries then make their recommendations to the J. William Fulbright Scholarship Board. In the case of Mexico, it's quite common that a Skype interview will be involved in your application process. Not every country features this, but it's quite common in Mexico. But the final decision is made by the J. William Foreign Fulbright Scholarship Board. Grantees are notified of the final approvals anywhere between February and May, and you can start your grant activity as early as June of the next the year after the application deadline. So before we start to take questions, folks have chatted in lots and lots of questions, so I really am grateful for that because I want this to be interactive. I just want to share some information for you to stay in touch with us and some additional resources for you. So you can join my Fulbright at CIES2.org. That is our network where you can specify your interests, for example, specific countries or specific disciplines, and receive targeted messages around your particular interest. You can absolutely contact me at westhem@iie.org. So feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions, if you're not really sure what intermediate Spanish means, or if you're stuck with some nuances that you're really not sure of in the application description, absolutely reach out to me at westhem@iie.org. We have a referral program where you can refer your colleagues to be considered for Fulbright Awards, so you're able to express to us through this referral program colleagues that you think might be interested in the Fulbright program. And then, of course, our website has lots and lots of resources. There are ways to engage with us on all social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. What I will do after this webinar, I'll follow up with everyone that registered for this webinar and share some digital materials for you that break down the resources that are available on our website. again, you know, we welcome contact, so absolutely feel free to be in touch with us. We're happy to help you. So at this point, I want to open the floor to questions. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up the questions that folks have already chatted in and start to answer them. And folks have chatted in lots of great questions. And if you think, if you think of something that I don't get to, absolutely feel free to get in touch with me at westhem@iie.org. So the first question is a great question. I'm a naturalized citizen in the U.S. I grew up and studied in Mexico. I'm a professor in the U.S. Am I eligible for a Fulbright in Mexico? So our award descriptions are really robust, and this question comes up in different countries. This is going to vary greatly by country. So some countries require you to not be a dual citizen of that country in order to participate in the Fulbright program. Others are neutral about it, and in some cases, it actually helps you in some ways. So for Mexico in general, it's not an issue unless it's otherwise expressed in the award description, and you would find that information under the applicant profile. But that's a great question. It's generally not an issue unless otherwise stated. We have a question here. Does a letter of invitation have to come from a university? So this is also something that's going to be in the information in the award description. Most affiliations are at universities, but there are cases where you're able to affiliate with an NGO or a research institution or other similar or cultural institutions. So it's not necessarily the case where you're able to, you're limited to a university. You may be able to affiliate with an NGO or a research institute or something along those lines. If you're unsure of that and it doesn't specify in the award description, absolutely reach out to us. And the follow-up question, what's considered an accredited institution? Generally an accredited university in Mexico, but again, if you have these sort of nuanced questions or if there's a particular institution that you're not sure of, that there's a particular institution, absolutely feel free to reach out to us. We have a question about what does early career mean? And that's a great question. So early career, this is it's going to vary by country and award, but specifically for the postdoc award in Mexico, they prefer applicants for this award to have a PhD conferred within the past 3 years. So you have a recently conferred doctoral degree, within the past 3 years. This is going to vary widely award to award. So you want to make sure that you check out the award requirements on the particular award and get a sense of what they're looking for. And if you're not sure about it, absolutely feel free to reach out to us. We have a great question about a home institution. So does my home institution, if I have one, have to be involved in any way? Do they have to sponsor or recommend me? Well, if you have a home institution in the U.S., there's no sponsorship recommendation process, a formalized one, but someone from your home institution may write one of your letters of recommendation, but it's not like a nomination process. There are varying levels of support from home institutions in the U.S. depending on the institution. So in some cases, you may be able to take a Fulbright while you're not up for a sabbatical. There may be resources that you have on campus. So you want to make sure that you check out what resources are available on your campus. We have a very extensive network of scholar liaisons, which are appointed point people on campuses for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. And we have a scholar liaison database where you can check if your institution has a scholar liaison. So there may be additional resources or insights that your institution can share with you along the lines of how your institution works with Fulbright Scholar applicants. This is a great question. What do you consider a bibliography for an artist applicant? So if you're applying in the arts, and I want to encourage folks in the arts to think about Mexico, that Mexico has a long history of supporting projects in the arts. You'll probably fit most congruently into the Social Sciences and Humanities Award, and that is a super open, you know, that doesn't necessarily scream the arts at you, but that's open-ended enough to accommodate projects across all the arts, from dance, the visual arts, performance arts, etc. So that's probably the one that's the most congruent for you if you're proposing a project in the arts. But if you're proposing a research project in the arts, what is the relevant work that is shaping the project that you're doing, that you refer to in the project, for example? What is the relevant, is there a body of research or you know, performances or art pieces that you refer to in or that sort of shape your project? That's what a bibliography for an arts project might look like. We have a follow-up question. What constitutes teaching? Does it have to be at a university or a community art center in Mexico? That's going to depend greatly around the particularities of the specific award. If you have a particular, again, I want to encourage you to reach out if you have a particular institution that you're not sure of. It's an NGO, a research institute, a cultural institute, and you're really not sure if it's an appropriate potential host for you, reach out to us and we can help you with that, or Comexis may be able, in fact, to give an opinion about that. So we have a great question here about the specialist program. So the Fulbright specialist program is different than the Fulbright U.S. Scholar program. The specialist program is you basically apply to be on a roster to receive the ability to then apply for particular short-term opportunities. And you're on the roster for a number of years. Generally, opportunities, I believe, are a month or so. Today, we're talking about the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, which is a different program from the specialist program. So the two-year waiting time is between scholar grants to scholar grants. So you're able to apply, again, for as many Fulbright Scholar grants as you're competitive to receive, but you have to wait 2 years from the end of your Fulbright U.S. Scholar grant before you can apply for another U.S. Scholar grant. I'm a U.S. citizen, but I have family in a particular area in Mexico. I plan on applying for an English teaching award. How much of a say do we get in terms of where we're placed? So this information is going to be written into the award, and I'm actually going to pull up, I'm not going to show the catalog, but I'm going to pull this up on my side just to give you sort of the specifics around the placement. So this award is placed. Candidates should not seek a letter of affiliation, but be open to going where the need is greatest. Based upon your expertise and the needs of the institution, placements are made with key institutions of higher education throughout Mexico. These placements will generally be outside of Mexico City. You should not make direct inquiries to Mexican institutions regarding an affiliation. You can express your interest if you have a particular institution or regional preference, and Comexis will, you know, they can take that into account as much as possible, but there are no guarantees of where you'll be placed. Then again, you want to make sure placement is restricted in based on the travel warning. So if you really want to go to a specific area in Mexico that is on the travel warning list, the likelihood of you being placed there is very, very low. So you want to make sure you understand that. So we have a question about the deadline. I'm confused by the August 1st deadline. Online it says the deadline is October 9th. So the August 1st deadline is for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. This is the program that is generally for faculty and administrators and professionals outside of academia. The October 9th deadline is for the Fulbright U.S. Student Program, which are awards that are for folks who have, recent graduates, people that are finishing up their bachelor's degree, basically anyone that is from their bachelor's degree all the way up to just before their doctoral degree is confirmed. So this is the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, which is designed generally for academics and professionals outside of academia, faculty, et cetera. The October 9th deadline is for the Fulbright U.S. Student Program. Similarly, I have a question about what do you recommend for candidates graduating college who are intermediate or more in Spanish and want to go to a Spanish-speaking country on their Fulbright. So if you're still in college, you really want to look at the Fulbright U.S. Student Program. And for the folks on this webinar that are more interested in the U.S. Student Program, I will actually follow up with you with some additional digital material specific to the Fulbright U.S. Student Program. So we have a question about the application, the grant start dates. When can I start if I'm applying now, when can I start my grant? This award, the awards that are available now are for grants that will start between 2019 and 2020. Generally, they can start as early as June of 2019, but this is going to vary greatly depending on the particular grants. Also, if you're applying for a teaching award or award that features teaching and you're at a host institution, you're teaching classes there, you're likely to have to be there for at least a semester because they won't want you to sort of jump in and out of teaching and sort of leave mid-semester. So that's something to keep in mind. If you're applying for a teaching award and you have to find a host institution in your discussions with that institution, you want to make sure that you iron out the dates well. If there's one of the things that makes an application not so strong is when there's an incongruence between what you're putting in your proposal as your project date and if the letter of invitation comes in with completely different dates or slightly off dates. You want to be having these discussions with your potential host institutions and make sure that everything aligns and that your project aligns as well. We have a great question for Dr. Richard. And Dr. Richard, if you can hear me, we just have a general question. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you did on your grant? How was it like living in Mexico? Did you have a good time? The question is really about some general information about what you did on your grant.
Sure, I had a great time. So great that I stayed. So when I wrote the grant, I already had a lot of experience working in Mexico since the late 1990s, so I've always done my my field work here. But one of the reasons that I applied for the Fulbright grant was that as a mid-career academic, it was really difficult for me to get away from my tenured position. And at the point that I applied, I was also department chair. So it was difficult for me to find the time and space to launch this new project that I wanted to work on that really involved a lot of intensive ethnographic field work. And so the grant was was an opportunity to do that. One of the pictures that I put up on the slide is of me with a group of children, and those kids are actually my godchildren from an earlier project in the state of Hidalgo, who were babies when I was doing the project and have grown up quite a bit. And so one of the things that the grant allowed me to do, aside from the research, was to reconnect with people who I'd grown close to in earlier projects. And I think that's another opportunity. We had questions about people who have family contacts or other sorts of contacts in Mexico, and being able to reactivate those is something that was really positive about the grant. And in fact, to the questions about is it okay that I have family here, I would say that that's actually an advantage for you. Having some sort of connection, previous connection to Mexico, will help you in a number of different ways on this grant. The easiest of which to think about is that when you arrive in a new place, you have someone to help you get the lay of the land. So it was wonderful for me to be able to reactivate those connections. Another picture that's there is of me in Oaxaca in a colonial monastery. An excellent part of the grant too was being able to travel to parts of Mexico that I didn't have time to in earlier research projects. And you know, I was based in Mexico City. You're in the center of everything. It's a wonderful city to live in. There's always something going on, but it was also centrally located so that I could travel to a number of different places. So I love living in Mexico. I live in Mexico City in the Roma neighborhood, which is a bit, people refer to it as Brooklyn South. So it's a really friendly, lovely, historical neighborhood to live in. And in fact, during my Fulbright year, a number of the grantees who were here in Mexico City lived in either this neighborhood or the neighboring Condesa neighborhood, and so we saw each other fairly regularly. So in terms of social life, I hung out with other Fulbright folks, but a lot of my social life was with my colleagues at my research institute and with people that I met here in my neighborhood. Trying to think of other, I don't know, what are other things that people are interested in knowing about the day-to-day of being on the grant?
We just had a super general question about, you know, what you did on your grant, but I think it might be helpful, you know, so if you were just doing research, you know, what kind of access did you have? Were you working with a particular department or a particular lab or a library, rather? You know, how did the research aspect of your work?
Sure, I can speak to that. So there were, you know, two major aspects to the research part. One is being involved in network of social science researchers and humanities researchers here in Mexico who were working on similar things about science and technology studies, about rights and democracy. So there are a couple of different sub areas of my research that I was able to engage with other scholars on, and that came about in part through my research institute. I was in the Center for North American Studies at the UNAM, and I was working with a researcher there, Edith Dantal, who was the head of strategic studies. And so she was able to initially connect me with several colleagues that she thought I might find interesting, and then from there I sort of just went about networking with other people, and that's kind of how you have to do things, especially at the UNAM. The UNAM is a very enormous research institution, but within it there are lots and lots of research institutes that sometimes operate in an insular manner, and so you kind of have to take it upon yourself to look out for opportunities to connect with people in other institutes or in other facultades. So that was one big part of the research, was becoming involved in those reading groups and seminars that really helped me to see how my colleagues were thinking about similar issues and to become, you know, involved and to have interlocutors here, which has continued to be really fruitful. The other part was doing the actual field work, which for me consisted a lot in very long ethnographic interviews, visits to labs and field sites, and participant observation in public events. And I did that by starting with a few contacts in some biological research institutes and then kind of snowballing from there. And that part, I thought, as an anthropologist, I had always worked in sort of small rural communities before where it's very difficult to gain entry. And so I was actually quite pleasantly surprised that, you know, I thought, here are scientists whose work is being politicized in a particular way, who might be nervous about talking to me. These are also really incredibly busy people. I was a little worried about contacting some of them. And actually, most people were, once I guaranteed anonymity, were really quite happy to talk with me and happy to have someone listen to what was going on in their world. So I spent a lot of time doing that. And many of those research institutes are located on the UNAM campus, and so I had really easy geographical access and on those terms.
Well, thank you so much. I think that's it's so helpful to hear not only the professional and academic side of what you did, but also the personal side. We have just one more minute, so I want to end with one more question. I want to invite Dr. Richard, if you can share your insight. If you had one piece of advice for an applicant to Mexico on the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, what would it be?
Become familiar with your Mexican interlocutors. It will make your research proposal richer because of that. You know, Peter, you mentioned earlier that the question of the person-to-person diplomacy as an integral component of Fulbright, I think that's really important here in terms of the research. Who's working on what you're doing in Mexico? Who are you going to engage with concretely? And it helps in terms of selection. I think a project that shows that you are aware of the kinds of research that are going on here and aware of where they're being done and that you have some specific idea of concretely who you need to be in conversation with will make your grant much, much more likely to be successful as it's filtered through the levels of selection here in Mexico as well.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Richard. I think that's incredibly helpful. And I hope that everyone who's joined us on the webinar today is inspired about applying to Mexico. We're looking forward to receiving your applications. I'll be in touch with everyone who registered for the webinar with some digital materials that you may find helpful, but we encourage you to stay in touch with us. And again, I want to thank Dr. Richard for joining us today.
Thanks, Peter.
Good luck, everyone, and thank you again, Dr. Richard.